Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And if you want to hear the extended version of this episode, please join the Patreon campaign. This week, I'm talking to Julia Evans about her book, The Lily Nurse, Rebooted, Rebirthed, and Finding a New Path. Julia's background is in Western medicine. She has a Bachelor of Science in Nursing and was a registered nurse for more than a decade. She has had three near-death experiences and multiple shared death experiences. After her first near-death experience, she experienced a remarkable healing of her multiple sclerosis. Hi, Julia. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called The Lily Nurse, Rebooted, Rebirthed, and Finding a New Path. And so I wanted to talk to you about the near-death experience you had. But first of all, you had a shared death experience on a beach, didn't you? What happened there?
I did. Well, I've actually had a few shared experiences. So the one you're referring to is of my stepmother, Connie. And when I went to Mexico for my brother's wedding, we were having this beautiful, beautiful moment of family and friends and love. And my mother had found a place of happiness, a place of paradise. And that chapter of my book, which is quite significant in my life, she ended up drowning and had a massive heart attack. And she died within my arms. Now, in that moment, your world changes. We had switched roles from being the mother, like the stepmother and child. And it was that role was switched as she looked up at me as I pulled her out of the water. And I said, Mom, you just need to cough. You got to cough that water out, knowing as a nurse what was happening, because I knew she had aspirated a bit of that seawater. But in that moment, when she collapsed within my arms, her eyes had opened up as if she was looking at something. And I watched her soul leave her eyes. But in that moment of watching her soul leave her eyes, there was a beautiful piece to it that almost transported her and I to another reality or another realm, however you want to describe that. And it was just me and her on the beach. There was just, instead of all the chaos of what was happening, it was just this beauty and this tranquility, almost like this angelic moment. The ocean was still. The sand was untouched. And it was as if her and I were walking alongside each other and just walking towards a light. And I helped my mother walk into that light. And then it was just this other shock of reality as she started to transcend to that light, the one that everybody wishes and wants to know about. I got to see it. That hadn't been the first time I'd seen it. And then it brought me back to this reality that we're in and kind of the chaos of life. And that transpired into, okay, now we're in this reality. And then I started doing the code. So code just means I started doing compressions on her. I learned, I don't know Spanish well. As I started doing the first compressions, bringing her to the sand, when they say you can never do, or it's very difficult to do compressions on somebody you love, like your family or friends, it's very true. And so I ended up speaking Spanish almost fluently to one of the, I believe it was the catamaran worker or one of the workers from the resort. And I was teaching him Spanish. I don't know how I even learned how to do that. And once I got pulled out of that situation, another Canadian nurse pulled me aside and did an assessment while her partner, who is also a Canadian nurse, started compressions. And when they pulled me out, then I got to see the actual reality that was happening, that they were just working on a body, because I knew full well where she was at that point, and she wasn't in that body. That was just a shell they were working on. The significance of that was Years later, it reflected on my near-death experience because it was on Despeñaderas, which is Mother's Day in Mexico, which is also Mother's Day here. And so mine was actually on May 10th of 2018. So it was almost like I felt what she went through as well.
So you said just now that this wasn't the first time you'd seen the light.
The first time I'd seen the light was when my biological mother, Cheryl, and she's in the book numerous times throughout my book, and that's how I opened my book. She passed away in 1983, so I was just a wee lass. I was 3 years old. My mother died at home in my father's arms and just a floor beneath me. And when I was that little, looking back, I can remember the day as if it happened yesterday. Even in, like a lot of people say, kids don't remember a lot. Well, certain things you do. I remember her having a headache, and I remember just a bit of the chaos, not the full extent of it. But I know I was in bed. And when my mother passed, she died of a brain aneurysm. She was 25 years old and died draped in my father's arms, a floor beneath me. And as she transcended into the afterlife, I distinctly remember her coming through into my room. And I remember this infinite light of my mother. And ever since that day, it was just this awakening of perhaps a gift that she gave me to always see her, maybe a gift to see life different. And I don't know why she gifted me that, but that was the first time I saw it. Even when I woke up in the morning and I could see this radiant light everywhere, as if she was still in the heart of the home in the kitchen. And as a wee little girl, I wasn't even tall enough to see over top of the counter. And I remember coming downstairs and asking my father where my mommy was, because I knew something had been different. I felt a sorrow and a sadness, but yet I had this beautiful feeling around me that I was safe, that I felt loved, not abandoned or anything like that. But I just saw everybody crying in front of me. And my father had said to me, "She's dead. She's gone. She left us." I mean, that kind of created a hole in my heart for a very long time. But I couldn't understand why no one else could see that light, that this energy and this light and this beauty. It was like this, and I mean, people call it the veil, just kind of opened up. And I've always been able to tap into that just to kind of see her. So that was the first time.
Wow.
I've watched, I mean, in my nursing career, when I started my nursing career, I was in charge of palliative and bereavement care. So the end stages of people's lives. So I've watched a lot of people cross over. I've watched a lot of that human experience within my nursing career of when a person is either sick or near the end of their life, what transpires for them in this human existence, that the stories and the amount of times that it's consistent. From them having very vivid dreams or having almost this paranormal sightings of a loved one that's passed, who's inviting them home, waiting for them to come home. And as I say that, I have goosebumps, and I don't know if you or the people who are going to be listening will have goosebumps too, of knowing a loved one who's done that. It's like they awaken and make sure they finish off just some loose ends before they pass. Death isn't necessarily an awful thing. It's a rite of passage. And I've experienced it a lot from friends and family, patients, and then my own death.
So you had MS, didn't you? Or you still have MS?
Yes, I have MS. I have the box that Western medicine deemed me as multiple sclerosis. I was diagnosed with that in October of 2014. So I was 34 years old. And with everything that's happened, I was at the weakest component of my life before my near-death experience. And I had so many troubles with it. I was partially blind in my left eye. I had about 47 lesions in my brain. And for those who don't know what multiple sclerosis is, it's a debilitating disease that eats away at your myelin sheath. And your myelin sheath is the protective layer of your nervous system. And something within me was eating away at me. And if you think about that, that protection of the truth and what you need to speak of, it eats away at you if you're not able to speak it. I mean, I hid what I could do, that I could talk to my mother, I could see, as people call it, paranormal activity, spirits, guides, whatever you want to call it, angels even. I hid that. And there was other components in my life that I couldn't speak of. And so that MS, that dreaded, drastic and debilitating disease, ate away at me. And for years, it started to progress very quickly at first. I used a cane. Some days I couldn't even use my legs at all. And it was just like everything was shutting down. I was shutting down. And then after my near-death experience, and I know you've read parts of my book, Simon, the day after I woke up from having my near-death experience, I woke up as if everything has changed. And prior to that, every morning for years, I would wake up and assess my body. Can I wiggle my toes? Can I feel my feet today? Am I able to move my legs enough? Am I able to sit upon the side of my bed? Am I going to be able to walk to the bathroom down the stairs? Am I going to be able to work? Am I going to be able to take care of my family, myself, and my household, my family? And so the day after my near-death experience, I woke up quite differently. I looked out the window, which was on the left side of me, and I could fully see. I could fully see that blind spot had been now lifted. I had complete feeling in my feet. And that saying, the sole of your feet, it was like my soul came back. It felt like everything within my being came back home to me, as if I chose to be here, that I didn't want to just stay with my mother on the other side, kind of hovering in between these two worlds, that I chose to be here. And so when I woke up that morning, I had no deficits. Shortly after that, my neurologist had got an emergency MRI just to see what was going on because my heart was affected. I was in heart failure after my experience. But my lesions were gone, 47 lesions, and we couldn't explain it. I remember sitting in the office at my neurologist, and he showed me my MRI. Both of us couldn't believe it. And I asked him if it was a different MRI. And I asked him what this meant. And he said he didn't know. And the two of us tried to navigate our thoughts through that. And he said, well, perhaps because of the excessive amount of epinephrine, perhaps because you were rebooted, perhaps the jolt from the defibrillation, not once, but twice. Maybe it was like unplugging you and plugging you back in, like our computers. We couldn't figure it out. And as we were having this discussion, I looked at him and I said, or perhaps I did go to the other side and I learned how to heal. And I healed myself on every level. Perhaps I was in the hands of God. Now in Western medicine, he kind of looked at me and went, well, maybe, but let's go another route. Let's just figure something out. Now, over the last few years since my experience, I didn't have a lot of deficits for a very long time until I had to experience a very stressful component in my life. And as I was dealing with that stress, my MS symptoms started to come back very quickly again. And as I got out of a situation that no longer needed to be with me, my MS started to melt away again. Since my first near-death experience, May 10th, 2018, which my book is about, it's a near-death experience through the eyes of a nurse. I've had two other very significant ones, awakenings, perhaps, to remind me that I chose to be here, that I chose to be in this body, and that I've got either a purpose or a mission, something here on this earth to fulfill. So today, I mean, I don't have any symptoms. I don't have any deficits of the MS disease, that box that Western medicine had gifted me. And as of December, this past December, I still remain with zero lesions. And this was the first time that my neurologist had accepted that there was something more that was happening to me, my body, my spirit, that something new was there. Because he had never seen somebody reverse any deficits. It's not that I just don't have lesions, but the glitches and the hesitations of my gait or my walk, the way my hands move, the fine motor skills, all of it reactivated as if I have a brand new existence, brand new life.
Before we get on to the near-death experience, you did have a do not resuscitate, didn't you? And why did you take that away?
I did cancel the DNR. So leading up to the DNR, and for people that don't know, I'm going to just repeat, it's do not resuscitate. So that's when you have that moment where you can't decide what to do for a paramedic or a loved one or somebody to do compressions on your heart and keep your heart pumping in order for a professional to help you fully come back. At that time when I decided that, it was it almost felt like a no-brainer to be a DNR, because I felt that my multiple sclerosis was getting too much for me to handle. And I just wanted the acceptance of the whole family, and I wanted to prepare them of not having to go through that, because I had done that with my stepmother years prior on the beach of Mexico, and she had died in my arms, and I didn't want to be a burden. And I knew that if God, if something on my path wanted me to collapse and my heart to stop, that perhaps it was a reason, and that I didn't need anybody here on this earth to bring me back, because there was sorrow and there was a lot of other things with that disease and how you have a totally different perspective on life. Yes, you try to live life to the fullest, but you have a dread and a fear of what is to become, what burdens you're going to bestow upon your family. And right before my DNR, I was laying on the couch, and at the time with my husband, and I heard a voice, and people have asked me, who is that voice? I don't know if it was my higher self. I don't know if it was my mother or God. All I know is that I heard something very distinctly and very clear to lift my DNR. And I've got those goosebumps again, as if I can hear that voice. And I sat straight up on that couch and almost frantically, we've got to reverse it, like now. And so we had brought the kids back in the house and told them, okay, like revamp her plan. Mom is going to, if any time I collapse, what do we do? And we did a scenario because the kids were young. You call 911 and get them to work on mom, because I've got a purpose to be here. I have to be here. And I had put that down in my living will. In most places, a friend of mine had my living will, a nursing friend of mine. And right before my incident, I had no idea that I would have this incident of my near-death experience. But even after coming back, after being defibrillated, after having chest compressions, after all of that chaos within Western medicine on my unit, I had a nurse come running in from emergency room onto my unit, bawling. And she said, stop, stop, stop. She's a DNR, because she didn't know I reversed it. And they had already worked on me and I had already come back into my body. I was sitting straight up and I just smiled at her. And I said, it's okay, Morgan. I reversed it. I said, I reversed it 2 weeks ago. And she came up to me and she said, we need you here. And it didn't matter if you were a DNR. All of us would have jumped on you regardless. And we would have dealt with the consequences because you have to be here. So yes, I had reversed. I had heard a voice. And at the time, both decisions were right for me.
So with the near-death experience, it started with an allergy to lilies, didn't it?
Correct. At the time, the significance of the day with my mother's passing years ago in my arms, also the passing of my best friend, it would have been her birthday. I was going up to my unit as a regular day, and I crossed that threshold of my unit. I opened that door and it was like a gateway, maybe a portal, however you want to describe it. And I crossed that threshold and I said good morning to one of my colleagues. And that was the last normal breath that I took, was good morning. And my throat started getting really scratchy. And I did a quick nurse assessment of myself, like that. Did I eat something funny? Did I come in contact with something funny? And it's this quick assessment, trying to scan my environment. And as I'm doing that, I can feel almost my throat closing, like it was sandpaper. My voice is starting to get very scratchy. And as I scanned my environment, right in front of me was stargazer lilies. Now the lilies were there because it was Nurses Week and the charge nurse brought them in as a thank you, something beautiful in the center of our unit to thank all of us for how amazing the staff is, not doing anything malicious or anything like that. It was just a beautiful sentiment of bringing love into the center of our unit. Now I didn't know I was anaphylactic. I was allergic. And I had had reactions to lilies before. And my reactions up to this point was always a little scratchy. I would start coughing, but I would always remove myself out of the environment. And I would end up going to the doctor and I would take a Reactin or so, a Benadryl or something, an antihistamine to help what was happening. But I could always swallow that pill. And then I would always go to the doctor and get prednisone, a steroid, to help with that medication. But this time was different. This time I didn't leave the environment and I felt either drawn or pushed, pulled towards the direction towards the lilies. It was as if they were beckoning me to look at my life differently. It was stargazer lilies, which are the most potent lilies. Beautiful, but most potent. And that aroma and that pungent aroma, beautiful, but deadly, surrounded me and it was in me. And there was no escaping it. And it's interesting to look back at it and the significance of what a stargazer lily does, because it's the opposite of a sunflower. It actually will turn and look up at the stars. And so I was so busy with looking down at, like, trying to survive my illness and my disease and just trying to just push through and not looking up and enjoying the full spectrum of life. So that was like a nice little metaphor for me. But in that moment, everything happened very quickly. I started to become hypoxic, which means my airway was closing. So I started turning blue. Oxygen wasn't coming into me, into my cells or into my lungs. And I was moving my hands so I could tell the girls, like, get the lilies out of here. And I grabbing my throat, like that universal sign of choking. I felt like I was drowning in air. I mean, looking back, I could have run the other way out of the unit, but something was pulling, pushing, I don't know, towards the lilies. So one of the nurses was moving the lilies, and I walked past the nursing station into the break room. And I sat down, and there was a few of my colleagues in there. And at that point, things were getting so chaotic in my body that I knew something was happening. Like, this was beyond emergent. And so the nurses, one ran to get a Benadryl, one ran to get a wheelchair, one ran to phone my husband. And another colleague, which wasn't a nurse, stared at me watching. And I mean, her and I still talk, and she had apologized to me. She's like, I didn't know what to do. I froze. She said, I was watching one of my very dear friends die before me. She said, the color of blue you were turning was it was not a color she'd ever seen. So the back of the back of the lunchroom opened up into our procedure room area. And I heard two nurses bickering about what to do, if they should call a code. So press that light, press that button on the wall to call a medical emergency. Do they have time to rush me to emergency? Now, the unit that I had worked on, it's not common to do codes, especially like this. We didn't really have, we had the equipment to deal with it, but we didn't deal with it on a normal basis. It was almost like something new. Even though all of us are trained, you get trained in different areas. And so I had stepped up knowing full well that something needed to happen. And I got into the wheelchair, and something pressed the call light. Now, to this day, not one of us knows who or what created that light to go off, that code blue, you know, the one that echoes across the whole entire hospital, saying where the code is and what unit. And as that code bell or alarm went off, all the procedure rooms opened. And one of my best friends, work best friends, she looked at me and said, of course she swore and said, it's bleep, it's Julia Evans. And she took the wheelchair and went running down the hall. In that same moment, through another room, a physician had come out, and we locked eyes. And he had told me after, it was like a look of desperation, as if I was screaming to him through my eyes of save me. Now, he grabbed from his cart what he needed to grab, that we know, the epinephrine. And they went running down the hall to the center of my unit, where the spot 7, bed 13, and I jumped in. And we didn't even lower the bed because there wasn't enough time. So I got into the bed with my last breath, and I exposed my arms and just surrendered to what was going to happen. I didn't know if I was going to be saved. I didn't know if I was going to completely cross over. I just surrendered to it. The physician had started an IV before the code team fully came. So they were bringing all the equipment to my bedside, but he had this medication with him, and he drew it up and injected it into my arm. And this epinephrine was actually the wrong dose. Him not knowing it was the wrong dose, and it was 10 times the amount that went into my bloodstream, into my heart. Now, there's a certain concentration for your heart or for your reaction that can go straight into the vein. And so that concentration is 1 in 10,000. The one that goes into your leg is 1 in 1,000. So when people carry an EpiPen, that's what it is. There is a difference because it's slower to go into the body. But this went directly through my vein into my heart. I did start breathing right away before the code team could start bagging me. I sat up and I felt like a superhero, as if I had so much adrenaline surging through my body that I could take on the world.
Hello, this is me, Simon. Did you know that during a past life regression, you can meet with your spirit guide? I conduct past life regression sessions over Zoom, and I've guided many clients to a spiritual encounter with their guide. If you would like to ask me how a session would work for you, you can book a free 20-minute consultation on my website, pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The link is in the show notes.
That's when everything started to change. I got to look around my surrounding as I laid upon that stretcher, and no curtains were drawn. There was about 30 people around my bed from other units. So other code teams came running to this situation, especially because it's a staff member. And I'm not saying especially that way, but more people stayed because it is a staff member. We still have the same amount of people for a patient that comes, but we allow certain people to jump in and stay during a code. And so what I mean about them staying is they couldn't believe what was happening to one of their own. Now, as I sat on my bed or the stretcher, I knew something else was happening. I didn't know that I had that amount of epinephrine surging through my veins and in my heart. And I remember that feeling and that pain of my heart exploding. Perhaps it was all the pain that I had had from my mother dying when I was 3, from my stepmother dying in my arms, all the heartache. I mean, I can look back and assess it a different way, but at that time, all I knew was the pain. As I described it, it was like 20 out of 10 pain on that pain scale. My heart rate started going through the roof, my blood pressure through the roof. So they thought I was having a heart attack, and so they gave me other medication. And no one really knew what was happening. Like, how can a person just stand or walk onto a unit and then this happens? Now, as I was looking around my surroundings, I still ran my code. And what that means is my nurse kicked in. I wasn't really paying attention to just me. I looked at everybody around me, making sure my environment, everybody was taken care of. Even the patient across from me staring. And I remember saying, like, I need him out of here because he's going to be traumatized with what he... And it was like I knew what was happening and was just preparing perhaps myself and everyone else with what was about to happen. And this nurse had looked at me and I kept saying, like, my heart's exploding. And I had this pressure in the back of my head as if the back of my head just blew away. And looking at it now, all these years, maybe it was the pressure and the pain that I was feeling of my mother when she died from her brain aneurysm. Perhaps it was the feeling of when my best friend, which was her birthday years prior, she had killed herself. And maybe I felt that when she shot herself, because she was there. My mothers were there. I could see them. And I started screaming, and this one nurse said, "Oh, I've been pricked in the finger with epi before. It's just the feeling of epi." Now, my internal voice wanted to scream and swear at her and say, this is totally different. This isn't just a little prick on the finger. And I kept saying to everyone, just put leads on me, put the defibrillation pads on me. I'm going down. Like, I was preparing everyone as if I knew, almost like I knew about my DNR. It was just like, I just knew it's time that this body needs to reboot and come back. And I ended up laying down because I couldn't take the pressure anymore. And when I laid upon the stretcher, I grabbed hold of Barb's hand and I looked at her dead in the eye, and they'd already turned around the blood pressure machine. And my blood pressure was through the roof, my heart rate through the roof. And when I looked at Barb's eyes, I had to make sure she was ready to see what was about to happen. Maybe for her to reflect it back to me. I don't know. And once I looked at her, I said, make sure my kids are okay. Make sure my husband is okay. And call Marie because she has my living will. Because I knew full well that my reversed DNR was in there, that I wanted to be saved. And then I turned the other way towards the blood pressure machine and I died. I went from blue to white to gray, the color of death. And that's what was happening to my body here. But when I looked to that blood pressure machine and everything stopped, I was in, it's called pulseless VTAC, that my heart wasn't even beating. It was just having like this electrical impulses, this highest frequency that it wasn't even beating. There was no blood circulating. But I was brought to this void, this blank consciousness of an existence that almost felt safe, that it was so dark. It was like nothing. Like I was left behind. And I left behind everything, all of my senses, my body. It was just like I knew that I was somewhere else. It was darker than dark, blacker than black. I've called it the void, the blank consciousness. But it opened up my sixth sense. I knew it was the knowing. I wanted to cry, almost like I felt like somebody forgot about me, as if I was in a waiting room or something. And I wanted to cry, but it wasn't my eyes that wanted to cry. It was my heart. And when I finally felt that, I heard my mom. And she said, "It's okay, Julia, mommy's here." And as I heard her voice, I hadn't heard her voice that clearly, that clear as day, as if she was standing beside me when she put me down to bed before she died. And when she said that, then I heard clear. And I was brought back into this world and back into this chaos. And they had defibrillated me on this earth plane, I guess you can say. And I wasn't in my body. I was hovering over my body, probably about a foot or two over my body. I could see everything. I could see them working on me. I could see colleagues that I never thought would ever cry, bawling their eyes out, screaming at me, doing assessments of trying to bring me back. Of Julia, wiggle your toes, take a breath, breathe, praying, breathe, Julia. That's all I remember. Breathe. And in my mind, I was trying to scream at them. Like I would, if I could, somebody save me, because I wanted to be back. I wanted to be back in that body. I needed to be back. And yet I didn't want to be a burden. I didn't want my family to go through what I went through with my mom back in Mexico, and that trauma and that experience of losing a mother. And it was too chaotic. And I begged a higher power. I begged God to put me back into that black, that nothing. I felt more comfortable there than what this chaos had created. And then I heard, "We lost her again." And then I was transported into this other knowing, I guess you could call it. And it was the light. And within that light, it's not just a light, but there's so much love within that, that love radiates light. It's like you become everything. So you were nothing and now you're all, knowing full well that you have both spectrums of that. And you're gifted the greatest gift, which is self-love. And that heart just healed. It was just like coming home. And everyone who had passed before me, my moms and my best friend, even my dog, they're just surrounding me. It felt like an eternity being there. It felt beyond bliss. There's no actual human word to describe it. I try to describe it as that first time when you have a child and you deliver that baby, and the first time you look into your child's eyes and the amount of love that gaze, that first gaze, it's almost like that. Like you just know this creation and this unconditional love and a light like beyond measures. Within this bliss, I then heard clear, and I felt the 150 joules surge through me, and I got brought back again. Hard, like you were hitting rock bottom, like you were just hitting a hard, hard cement floor right back into my body. And I didn't know what was happening at the time. I remember it was like being gifted a choice that at the foot of my bed, there was this image, and it looked like a human figure with arms open. Now, I know who it was. It was the charge nurse from the emergency department, and he had his arms open, and it represented Jesus. He had this flowing, beautiful hair that all of us nurses just hated him for, because every woman wanted hair like that, and he always had it in a man bun on the top of his head, and he had this glow to him. Like as if I could follow him, I could choose to stay in that kingdom. I could stay in heaven. I'd stay with him, go to salvation. And also there is this part, and it just activated another part of my beliefs. And it's of Buddha. And it's just the knowledge and the energy and that belief around who Buddha is. And that nirvana and that. So that choosing, and it was that choice of I could go with and never look back or look down. And I instinctively looked down to see what I was in. And what I mean what I was in was I in a body? And when I looked down instinctively, as if I didn't have a choice, that path was already destined for me to follow, and I was naked. And I was really upset at first, because that's when my conscious mind started wakening up. And that conscious ability to understand that I am naked and I'm somewhere where I'm probably shouldn't be naked. And then I was angry because my favorite blue bra had been cut. And that realization and that comedy of it. And I said it out loud, who cut my favorite blue bra? And the image at the end of my bed had now transported into that human form. And he had said, inappropriate behavior, Julia's back. And that's when like this other layer opened up, like more conscious, my whole environment slowly started opening up into my conscious world, as if that tunnel, and the light was opening to this world and this existence. And I said, back from what? And this nurse on my right side put her hand upon me. And she was a CSU nurse. And her name is Cheryl. And so I was still in between the worlds. And I looked at her and she goes, I brought you back. We defibrillated you. I brought you back. But this cute little ICU nurse with a bobbed haircut like transformed into my mom. And my mom's name is Cheryl. And it was the first time I could feel my mom, like physically feel her. And looking at my mom as if she helped me come back. She helped me. Not that she didn't want me in heaven, but knowing full well that whatever gift she gave me when I was 3 years old, I had to fulfill it. I had to do something, and there was a reason why I had to come back. Not be a DNR. I don't have a choice to let go of this life, that there is something way more for me. And so I looked at her, and then I looked at my chest, and I looked at the machine that was beside me. And then my gaze looked from the machine, and it followed these cords that I didn't see at first. And then I saw these cords attached to my body and to all the stickers and the defibrillation pad, her pads. And then it was like this other form of reality set in. And it was, I was coming back into my body, into my awareness, into this whole new reality of who I am. And it was like my conscious brain started opening up more and more, like a halogen lights, those big lights that take forever to warm up. It was like another layer, another layer. And as these layers of my new existence or this rebirth, it made me see things differently. Not only was I watching the chaos and everything that was happening around me, but it was like I felt and knew this light within me. The light that I had experienced on the other side was with me, in me, surrounding me. And the first person after that that I saw was, it would have been the technician that had put the leads on me, so the pads on my body, who was assessing my heart, my EKG. And I saw her. And then I saw her grandparents behind her, and she wore a locket. And I mentioned it to her because I could see not just the people around me that's passed, but I also saw all the people that passed beyond everyone in that room. It was like I could see everybody's lineage, this other awakening that totally threw me by surprise, that I could see it all, this knowing. And I mentioned that to her, that her grandparents, the one that she wears in the locket, and she's like, how did you know that? And it was like, I went to the next person and could see that lineage of that CCA and all the people that passed before him that still help him on his path, and just scanning the room and just seeing it. At first, it was just like this complete understanding, like, yeah, this is who I am, just no denying it. To coming back into this conscious world, like, well, I'm a nurse. I don't really want to talk about this. And through that experience, coming back not quite fully into my body yet, or coming back into this world. But then I got almost silenced in what I was experiencing. The things you say when you come back from a near-death experience, it's so raw and so unfiltered. I said a few words and asked for the day off. As many nurses out there know, it's very hard to get days off and there's a lot of burnout. I was then taken to emerge and still trying to learn what it was like to come back into this body, come back into this world, and even going up to the cardiac surveillance unit and being monitored one-on-one, not knowing if I was ever going to come back to my actual existence, if I was going to die that night. I remember being absolutely terrified to close my eyes, and it took me a very long time. I actually had to give me medication to help me sleep that night. And I had said to the nurse, I don't want to close my eyes, because I knew the beauty that laid behind my eyes, because I'd been to that light. And I was scared that perhaps I chose wrong. So that's part of my near-death experience, and everything's changed since then, from opening my eyes the next day and having a new experience. That's why I titled it Rebooted and Rebirthed and Finding a New Path. There was a new destination. There was something in my world that needed to completely switch paths, like a train, you know, when a conductor or there's something outside of you changes that path and that course. Something had to knock me off whatever I was in to create this existence that I am where I am today. And since then, I've had a few other ones that other books that I'm writing will talk about, and I'm starting to be comfortable in talking about it. Hence why I'm doing podcasts and opening up to other people to help them on their paths, to help them on their journeys, and perhaps learning the life lesson and the path that I was always destined to follow.
Well, we've been talking about your book. It's called The Lily Nurse, Rebooted, Rebirthed, and Finding a New Path. People can find that on Amazon.
Correct. And the name The Lily Nurse, as we're finishing up here, actually stems from the staff gave me that name. So because I had an anaphylactic reaction to a lily, and because I'm a nurse, all of the emotions, all of the experience, everything was all wrapped up into one tiny little box or three tiny little words to help everyone else maneuver through that or to label it, because it was just far beyond anything that they could accept or me. And I took that name. So people in the hospital, the staff started calling me, "Oh, you're the Lily Nurse." And it stuck. And I accepted all of their emotions and I took it in, because I was the one that came back. And I had a lot of guilt that they had to experience a very traumatic event because of a path change in my world. And then I realized, no, all of them who were on that path with me needed to experience it as well. It wasn't just me that had it, but it was all of them that had it. Now, with that energy and that wording, the Lily Nurse, it spread like a wildfire, not just through the hospital, but it spread throughout my community. And so when I left the hospital, I was grocery shopping and a 15-year-old boy came up to me. I didn't know him. And he said, "Oh my God, you're the Lily Nurse." I said, "How did you know that? How do you know that name? Like, that name shouldn't have left the hospital." And he said, my teacher was the one that watched you die. So the one that I talked about that I asked to move or he would be traumatized, he went to the school where my kids now go to, or my daughter goes to now. My son's now graduated. But it was one of the teachers from the high school that watched me die. And he started calling me the Lily Nurse. So then my community knew. And then that word spread throughout Canada. And then it spread throughout the US. And then it spread throughout, like, people know me around the world. And that, I'm not saying that for ego, but that name flies through of a story. And that story was never told. And so I owned that story at every level so I could tell my version of it, because I'm the one that it happened to. And it wasn't until, and it does say it in my book, it wasn't until a day, 6 months after my near-death experience, and I was admitting one of my patients. And it was to the day, 6 months to the day, to the almost hour. And as I was admitting this patient, somebody from behind me on my left side was saying good morning. And as I was turning my head to say good morning, halfway to turning and seeing who it was, a code was called overhead, not for our unit, but for the awareness, I'm going to say, for both of us. It was the physician that gave me the wrong medication. We locked eyes, and then we both looked over to the spot of where I died and came back. And we looked again and took a breath. And he said, I'm so happy you came back, and walked away as if nothing happened, that nothing in his life had changed. And in that moment, I took all of that, everything I felt, everything that had changed in my life, and I sucked it all in. And I put it behind that professional mask, and I took a breath and tried to be like, okay, I got to get back to nurse mode. And I looked at my client and I said, I'm sorry, when there's a call announced overhead, we have to assess it and see if we need to run. So I apologize. You have my undivided attention now. And she looked up at me and said, oh my God, you're the nurse that died here. You're the Lily nurse. And that was the moment where I'm like, I need to tell the story. And so that's why I kept with that name through all these years. And I own every part of it. I own every experience, everything that those three little words represents.
Do you have an email address where people can contact you?
Just like the cover of my book. So thelilynurse@gmail.com.
Well, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. It's been fantastic listening to you.
Yeah, well, thank you for interviewing me, Simon.
This week, I was talking to Julia Evans about her book, The Lily Nurse, Rebooted, Rebirthed, and Finding a New Path. If you want to hear the rest of this fascinating interview, you can sign up to Patreon. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife. Or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. My book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, is now available on Amazon. You can get it on paperback, audiobook, and Kindle. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.